Welcome to Wharton India Economic Forum's podcast. We are Wharton's premier India-focused conference. In these episodes, we will host eminent leaders, academics, and young professionals to discuss India's evolution into a prominent economic global power. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Nayan Badir. And in today's episode, I'm joined by Swati Ganeti. Swati is a Wharton Class of 2019 alum. She did her engineering from IIT Delhi and had a stint in consulting with Bain. Post-MBA, she narrowed her focus on the edtech space, joining White Hat Junior as a chief of staff to CEO Karan Bajaj. Early in 2022, she started her own edtech company, Softclay, and recently came on board with Masters Union to lead their undergraduate program. In this episode, we talk about her journey into edtech after MBA, the philosophy behind Masters Union, and how Swati combined the elements of experiential learning at Wharton with technical education relevant for this day and age to design and launch Masters Union's undergraduate program in technology and business. We hope you enjoy this conversation. Everyone, welcome to this episode of Wharton India Economic Forum's podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Swati Ganeti. From Masters Union joining us. Swati is not just a Wharton alumni, but also a WEF alumni. And we are very glad to have her join us. Swati, welcome to the episode.
Thank you. Thank you, Nayan, for inviting me and giving me this opportunity. And, it brings back all the memories I have of being a WEF co-chair. Thank you.
Amazing. Swati, to begin with, I would love to start with a bit of your personal journey. Your career has taken you from engineering in India to consulting in India, business school in the US, and back to India. Can you talk more about the guiding principles that helped you along this journey and just give a little little sneak peek of your journey to our listeners?
Absolutely. So I graduated from IIT Delhi long back in 2013. And I was fortunate enough to, be trained and groomed at Bain & Company. And I recommend everybody, whenever I meet somebody who's graduating and thinking of, whether to go into consulting or not, I think it's a great opportunity for those 2 years to just learn so much at such a fast pace. Right. So the guiding principle for me always, and I'll talk about the transitions I've made, has always been learning and job satisfaction. Right. So I was at Bain for 4 years, went on to do my MBA at Wharton, came back to Bain again. And every year my role was changing. You start from being an analyst to becoming a consultant where you're managing one or two associates, and then finally you become a manager and you're managing the full team. So, and you're managing the client also. And at that moment, whenever I felt that, hey, this is it, I think I've done consulting for a long number of years. It was 5 years when I left Bain. I was really, really wanting to do something and build something, right? So then I joined White Hat Junior as chief of staff to Karan Bajaj. And again, learned a lot about startups. I had never worked in a startup before that. It was a lot of 0 to 1, a lot of hustle, a lot of just getting things done and, fighting the fires. And once that happened, once I felt that, hey, I've learned enough, why don't we do something else? And that's where I think you also get the confidence of starting something when you work at a startup. So after 1.5 years of White Hat, I started my own edtech venture called Softclay, which was in the space of career guidance. Again, I think that was another whole journey, right? Pitching to VCs, being the founder yourself and having that responsibility of starting something very, very, from scratch, which is as simple as getting your website together or figuring out what the logo of your company is going to look like. I think I learned a lot there. But then I realized that probably I'm not a great 0 to 1 person, right? Or maybe I realized that, hey, I don't think the model is going somewhere and pivoting might take multiple years. And maybe I'm suited somewhere else. And that's when, and education has been that constant thread that has motivated me always. And I decided that, hey, education is where I want to contribute to. And that's when I said, okay, what is the problem statement? And Softclay taught me that problem statement is that the higher education in India hasn't been able to keep pace with the industry. And that's why there are a lot of band-aid solutions that have come up, right? EdTech is full of great brands doing a lot of upskilling and getting people jobs. But why, ideally, something that a college should be doing? And Masters Union at the same moment is trying to enter into higher ed where it's a proper college, gives you the real skills in product management, you know, digital marketing. And the 4 years that you spend in your college life is what, you know, we are targeting at. And that kind of resonated with me. And I said, okay, you know, let's join Masters Union and build something that really, really creates the solution that the industry needs.
That's incredible. And we want to get our listeners to understand more about Masters Union and the incredible philosophy behind starting this. But I want to pick a point that you said, which is higher education in India is not solved. You also went through a Wharton MBA, and that was also a different master's level education that you had in your own career. Could you just tell us what were things that were memorable experiences from Wharton, and what did you pick there that you felt was lacking in higher education in India?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's all about people around you. One is that, and then second is experiential learning. Let me talk about the people around you, right? Now, when I was at Wharton, every week some CXO was coming and talking about their industry, right? And I very clearly remember Satya Nadella also coming, right? And we, like, the whole 3,000 people, full auditorium was there. And we were just in awe of, hey, like, who am I looking at in real life, right? And when you surround yourself with CXOs every week, then obviously the kind of ambition and the kind of aspiration you have in life automatically changes. And it changes slowly, but over the 2 years, you've just changed as a person, right? Every week that's changing you by 1%, but in those 52 into 2 weeks, you've completely changed probably the 100% of you, right? So that is one. And second is just the way things are taught, especially leadership. I remember at Wharton, I'm sure you also know this, we have leadership expeditions, right? Where you either climb a mountain for 10 days or you are in a sea for 10 days or you're going to Antarctica for 10 days, right? And the kind of roadblocks that you have, the kind of challenging environments that you face, and if you're leader of the group for that day, you have to make certain decisions, you know, whether we go this way or this way, whether we go back, you know, the team is not feeling well, do we take the risk or not? And this is not something that you can learn in a textbook, right? So I think those have been my learnings, and my focus has always at Wharton was to get the best. Like I did during all my breaks, I tried to do the GNCs and the GIPs, and I went to Korea, I went to China. I mean, these are the countries I wouldn't be going to on a vacation, at least, always vacation spots are either Europe or Southeast Asia. So I was like, I really want to understand these countries, and let's take that opportunity to travel there and, you know, meet people. We went to Hyundai plant, and just looking at where my Santro really comes from, that was a huge revelation in itself. So I think those kind of experiences what made me, learn a lot from what.
And I think I have had similar experiences where Wharton has been really eye-opening with the experiential learning aspect, something which I feel was also lacking in my undergraduate education at IIT Bombay. And that's been really eye-opening. Another question I have out of curiosity is that coming back to India is a choice you made for your career as well. Would love to understand what made you go against the herd and just come to India right after MBA, where a lot of internationals at least try to stay in the US.
Correct. No, I think your clarity matters. And I think in all life decisions, clarity matters the most. A lot of people choose to stay back. Not because it's a choice, because also it's an expensive MBA, right? So if that is the reason, I think it makes sense to spend like two years there, you know, pay your loans and come back. So I was a sponsored consultant, so I had that privilege of just coming back there. But a lot of people also stay there because they want to shift to US, or they feel it's a better life there, right? Or better opportunities there, which I kind of don't agree with. I think if you look at the world today, India is the is the talked about country everywhere. You know, everybody says that, hey, India is growing, the rest of the world is not. Plus, for me also, I believe that my fuel is my family, right? Like I cannot live with the fact that, hey, if I need to drive back home, I'll just need to think about, like, you know, there's a 24-hour flight between me and my home. That's some fact that I can't live without. And I was like, hey, what's the point of living if you can't go back home on one call, right? So for me, that was priority. And it always remains the priority. Even today, I live like 5 minutes away from my family. But that's how, I think just having that sense of what you want in life and what's important to you. And then take a decision. I wouldn't say one decision is better than the other, but for you, what is better that you should always do?
No, absolutely. I think this is a point which a lot of internationals echo with of being so far away from home. But more importantly, and just also the theme for our edition of Water India Economic Forum is that India is such a center of growth and leader of change amidst this uncertain environment that we find ourselves in globally, with so much happening across the world. That also gets us excited and going to showcase that to our classmates and everyone else in the broader community. And thank you for that. I think finally on your journey, I'm very, you touched upon this, but what made you pick EdTech as a sector of focus? And now you've entrenched yourself in, talked about the impact that it helps you create. But just talk a little more about what helped you narrow down on this as an area of focus.
Yeah. So when I was in consulting, I think as a consultant, you get to experience a lot of industries, right? So I have worked on airlines and seaports and real estate and healthcare to everything. So every time I was getting on a project, I realized that I was super happy when I could feel a sense of impact and I could see that. And for me, that came either in healthcare or in education. Right, because it's very natural to see the impact in these two industries, right? Either you know, you're touching a student's life or you're touching somebody's life, literally, because it's healthcare. So for me, I was very clear, hey, these two industries, not outside this. And then you know, as things happened over time, I always wanted to be a doctor. So probably that's where the healthcare comes from. But as time progressed, there were a lot of action that was happening in EdTech. Right. So I realized that, and also you need less of a technical knowledge, I would say. Like healthcare, still there's a lot of, like, you know, whenever I did pharmaceutical cases or healthcare cases, I always felt at the back foot that I don't have healthcare knowledge. So it just felt natural to me to build a strength area in EdTech. And those were the times when EdTech was also booming. So when I did it, like, it kept I kept improving on it and understanding the full, you know, education business, EdTech as a business and all of that. And now it feels very natural, right? But I think it came from that sense of impact that I needed to do in any job that I could have picked.
That's very interesting. And now you're at Masters Union, which I want to learn more about and also get our listeners to understand more about. It's become a force to reckon with in the management education in the country in just a very short amount of time. Can you just tell us a little more about the history and philosophy behind Masters Union? What does the school stand for? And just help our listeners understand a little more about school.
Absolutely. So Masters Union is a business school, right? If I were to just explain in very plain language. But the history of it is that it's being led by people who've done their MBAs abroad, right? So people like me or people like you. So we all did like our undergrad here. And then after a few years, we went and did our MBAs abroad. And we could clearly see the difference. Hey, this is what we did at IIT. And hey, this is what we did at Wharton or Harvard or Stanford, right? And then we came back and we said, hey, you know, like Indians are doing really well in the ecosystem. In India, right, you have now, what, 100 unicorns, right? And even abroad, with Sundar Pichai, Satya Nadella, Indra Nooyi, pretty much, you know, Parag Agarwal, a lot of CEOs on the global stage as well. So why is it that we don't have a business school in the top 50? And I'm not even saying top 10 or 20, like top 50 of the world. Like, why not? Why is it so difficult when we know that so many Indians are leading so many great businesses, right? So that was the conversation. So in 2020 is when, you know, Masters Union started as an MBA school, right? So it's, you know, as a one-year MBA college, where we started with a batch of around 60, gradually took it up to 120, then 165, and the next batch was going to be 240 students. And over time, it became such a successful program that our placements were even better than IIM Ahmedabad and ISB, right? And then we reflected as to what we were doing so good that within such a short amount of time, you've been so successful, right? And then we realized that, hey, it's all about, in today's age, it's all about skilling the right way with the right set of tools, right? So we said, and one of the USPs of Masters Union is that professors who come here are actually CXOs in different companies, right? So these are not traditional academicians, but these are people who lead the industry. So if you are being taught digital marketing, a former Facebook executive is coming and teaching you digital marketing. If you're being taught product management, then a Microsoft executive is coming and teaching product management. And now when somebody from that background is teaching you, they are going to teach you what's relevant, right? And hence Microsoft will also come and recruit you because the person who heads the product development really trained and coached you, right? So he or she pretty much taught you what the skills are needed in the industry. So that I would say is one. Second, we believe that, you know, businesses cannot be taught by textbooks. They have to be taught. So we say that they learn business by running a business. So added a lot of components of students being able to run their own startup. I would say very similar to the VIP at Wharton. You know, I was part of that. It just grooms you to and coaches you to work on your own idea, right? So that you learn in the process, even if you make mistakes. Again, the point I talked about, surrounding yourselves with the CXOs. Now, we are pretty much located in the heart of Gurgaon, where a lot of CXOs live, right? So it's very easy to invite them to the campus, hear about their stories. Just 2 weeks back, we had Ghazal Alak, who is co-founder of Mamaearth. Talk about, you know, what her journey has been. And you, when you hear that live from somebody who's now running a unicorn startup, you pretty much understand what it takes to build that, right? So I don't think that kind of exposure was available in India. So we saw a clear white space and we said, hey, let's just do that. So now after 3 years of success, we have many verticals. We have an undergrad vertical. So you said, hey, if you can groom somebody in 1 year at the age of 25, why not have a full in-depth exposure for somebody at the age of 17? And that took for 4 years and see what kind of impact you can make. Right? So a lot of verticals coming up in Masters Union as well, post our success with the PCP.
That's incredible. And I think some of the success is testament to the fact that particularly placements have been incredible for Masters Union. I believe I touch upon placements because in India, one of the biggest metrics of success that people compare any program and outcome is that, wait, what's the real world application of this, which is how well is it rated by employers and how well do they rate candidates coming out of that school? And I believe Masters Union has outperformed as compared to some of the other schools, and congratulations on that. Can you also tell us a little bit more about just what has helped Masters Union find that success beyond these? So you talked about the four factors that has helped Masters Union find success. It's also been a very short amount of time. It's been marred by COVID and whatnot. What helped you deliver those outcomes even in these challenging times?
Yeah, no, absolutely. See, though it was really challenging. So when we started, it was a COVID year, right? And in that environment, to be starting a business school, which is actually not virtual, not an online three-month boot camp, but a
virtual
school, it was tough, right? So I still remember those classes when, you know, like the professors would all come in a mask, the students would come and all of that. So we still have pictures from there. All of that kept aside, I think, when you build a product that a customer, and here, I mean, students are the customers for us, you know, they really need, then I think things happen. So for us, it was very clear that, hey, you have only 1 year and you have to really use each minute of that 1 year very, very in an impactful way for the student, right? So all a lot of theoretical things that probably we do in management courses, we took all of that out. We said half of the curriculum is going to be in class. Half of the curriculum is going to be out class. Now, out in class is like, you know, your Facebook executive comes and teaches, Microsoft executive comes and teaches, and you kind of learn the theory and the basics. Or if you do come from a non-management background, then you learn accounting, and you learn finance and all of that, right? But then we said, okay, the rest 50% is all going to be out class. So which means that we have a dropshipping challenge where everybody has to build a dropshipping business. And you will be judged, not on an exam, but the revenue of your company, which is so real. Mm-hmm. Like a CEO in the real life is judged on the revenue of his or her company, you know, like a CEO never sits and writes an exam. Similarly, we have a local consulting challenge where what we do is we tie up with multiple businesses, let's say a Starbucks store or a Chai Point store or, you know, a KFC. And we say that you work with the store. And you see how the business can be improved. So you just learned operations management or you just learned HR management, right, in your previous semester or a term. And then now in your local consulting challenge, you're actually applying those concepts and either improving it, you know, operationally by improving the efficiency or maybe the incentive structures weren't aligned and you looked at it and you said, hey, people are not motivated here. Let me rework the incentive structures. But the idea is whatever you're learning, you're applying then and there. So it sticks in your brain. Otherwise, I mean, do you remember a lot of what you learned at IIT Bombay? It's been a while. We all forgot because it was little bookish, right? But when I learn something and then I apply it in the real life and I make mistakes and I remember those mistakes, then you learn a lot. And that has been the whole philosophy because we truly believe that the world is changing towards the skill-based economy where companies are going to value the skill an individual brings, not the degree, right? And we all, every 5 years, we all need to learn again. And I'm sure you have also felt that in your jobs before.
Absolutely, yeah.
Soon after working as well, new tools, new things, and you have to upskill yourself every year.
Yeah, it's a lifelong journey, absolutely. I also want to talk about selection and how selective Masters Union is, because I was reading some statistics around the crazy difference between a class of 120 versus the number of applicants you get. How do you pick the students to sign up to be students at Masters Union? What's the philosophy there?
Yeah, no, it's very similar to the Ivy League processes, right? So you're right, our selection rates last year were 10%. This year, it's even gone down, and that's good. That's a sign of success. But yeah, it makes our job really difficult as to how do we select. So absolutely, I think few criteria is like analytical skills, communication skills. So we have those same process that Ivy Leagues follow, that hey, get the application in that, you know, essay questions. But our essay questions are very, very different. We look for creativity, we look for innovativeness in those essays. And obviously communication. And then once that is in, we do an interview, right? And we also have our own aptitude test as well. So a lot of analytical skills, because that's important. Every business decisions these days need to be made based on data. You can't be very anecdotal about making decisions today, right? So analytical skills, a lot of communication skills through your interview and all of that, plus your ambition in life. That I think comes through your application or your essays and everything else. But the idea is, you know, like what's your aspiration in your life and what you want to really do with this one chance that God has given you. And that seat, I would say, at Masters Union comes with that responsibility that once you graduate from here, you're not going to waste that chance. You're going to use that to build something and to improve the world that is around you.
And I feel that process is so different from, say, going through a CAT process that IIMs follow that can reward certain kind of candidates who can, say, be good test takers. But is that always the predictor of success? That's a question mark. So I think that's a...
That's not. And I'll tell you why. Because there are so many of my batchmates from IIT who did not clear CAT, but today they are founders of unicorn startups. Right. So that itself is an evidence that clearing a JEE or clearing a CAT is not a metric of success. Yes, it's a metric of how great your analytical skills are, but that's not everything in real life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also want to talk about the undergrad education that we had. You talked about, if I remember anything from IIT Bombay, clearly I don't. It was very unidirectional. It was very bookish. I'm still grateful for the opportunity and the exposure it gave me, but that was more outside the class than in the class. I want to talk about how you see the need for better undergrad education in India, particularly as a combination of business and management. For instance, that's the Masters Union philosophy. Business and technology is the philosophy of the program itself. How important do you think that management education piece is, especially at the undergrad level?
So we debated a lot this point, right, before we launched our undergrad program, which is coming up next academic year. So we debated a lot as to, you know, everybody who wants to study business thinks about MBA. You know, we all have heard, beta, BTech kar lo, phir MBA kar lena. And we never have the logic. And it happens, believe me, it happens only in India where we hear the statement, do BTech and then do it. And there are programs, integrated programs that teach you BTech and an MBA. Which is pretty much giving you technology and then business management education. And I think the reason for that is if you look at all the businesses today and the big companies that, you know, are recruiting and we hear the names, be it Amazon, Google, Facebook, Flipkart, Myntra, whatever it is, right? These are all tech businesses. And the hottest jobs that we hear about, I'm sure a lot of your batchmates are going into product management, right? Now, that sits at the intersection of tech and business. As a product manager, you really need to understand what your tech team is saying and what the implementation challenges in the tech are, and then also understand what your business leaders are saying and you know, what their strategy and the vision is, and marry the two. And that's why product management becomes such an important designation in any company today. So we if you realize that marketing has now become digital marketing, you no longer need to understand how the billboard marketing works or how the TV marketing works. You need to understand how Insta and YouTube marketing works, right? So we said that's super important. And rather than doing it for 2 years in your MBA, and a lot of people in India who do MBA are also freshers, right? It's not that you're going after work experience and doing your MBA. A lot of IIMs also have people who've just done, been freshers, right? So we said, why not use those 4 years to build those experiences, right? Rather than saying this is something we will leave for afterwards. So what we do, we said we'll build something where in your first year, you'll just study core, which means you study your core about accounting, finance, basic of marketing, HR, etc. And then a little bit core about your tech also, which means your basic coding, right? Anybody, even if you're a business leader. So, for example, when I was running my own startup, I was dealing directly with developers. I didn't need to code, but I needed to understand what data structures are, what tables is. When somebody tells me, Swati, here we need to put in SQL, I need to understand what they're saying. Otherwise, I'm not a good CEO. I can't really solve any issue for them or make their life simple if I just don't even understand their language, right? So we have 4 courses around just understanding the basics of tech, basics of data structures and all of that. And then we said, then you go to year 2, year 3, year 4, and you choose your elective. So if you want to become a marketing expert, then go and do all the digital marketing courses, you know. If you really want to build a startup in the e-commerce space, then go ahead and do all the digital e-commerce courses that we have for you. And finance also, we made it FinTech because all the new age companies are in FinTech, though it is finance. Same. And then we are like, hey, then if you want to become a FinTech expert, just do that. But I think you need that four-year immersion to be able to reach that level. Otherwise, at least personally, the leaders here, we believe that it's too late if you start, having all of that in a one-year MBA or maybe a two-year MBA or later on in your life. But why not like mold yourself early when you're still a teenager, when, you know, the brain is still very impressionable? Why not start early?
That's an incredible philosophy. And I think the other element was about experiential learning and how that forms a big part of say what you took away from Wharton and at least what I am taking away from my Wharton MBA experience. And what do you think about integrating that in the undergrad education? How easy or difficult it is at an undergrad level to integrate those? And where I'm coming from is that with experiential learning, it's always helpful with if you're able to combine that with more real-world experiences. But if the whole course is designed to give you a real-world experience, it can be very valuable. I'm just curious to get your take on how you combined the elements of experiential learning with an undergrad education.
No, so I think it's very easy. And sometimes we underestimate our undergrads and our teenagers today, right? Like today's teenagers, you see 19-year-olds like running full-fledged startups and raising millions of dollars, right? So a 19-year-old of today is not the same as 19-year-old of 15 years back, right? Which is very, very different. So I think they are far more capable than we think they are. And pretty much all the experiential learnings which you are having in your MBA right now, whether it's the leadership expedition, whether it's your McNulty leadership program, right? It pretty much applies to the undergrads as well. They can also go for a 10-day mountain climbing and learn all the leadership lessons that you are now learning in your expedition. Or they can also work at, let's say, a Starbucks store and learn how they can contribute to improving the operations and all of that. Yes, they might make more silly mistakes, but that's okay, right? The whole point of an education is to learn in a safe environment and do those mistakes and then, hopefully take your lessons and move on. So I think it's pretty much, very much possible in undergrad as well.
Brilliant. And can you tell us a little more about how many disciplines would there be? So you talked about a few, but how many disciplines and when do you hope to launch the program?
So the program is already launched. I always keep saying what an undergrad program that because I'm heading it and I'm super passionate about it. We launched our applications mid of this month and we are following the same system as Ivy League. So round one is 15 Jan is the deadline. Round two, 28th Feb is the deadline. So pretty much the same process already on. It starts, I mean, the official start date of the program is in August. That's when, the new academic year starts and the classes start. But yes, it's a long process. So you submit your application and then you're invited for a group discussion and an interview, right? Similar to what happens for Wharton as well. You get invited from a group discussion and an interview. And then once you clear that, and then you get like your letter of admission and your scholarship letter.
Brilliant. And congratulations on the launch. I wish you all the best on that. I want to touch upon another aspect that I learned about the program, which is the focus on written skills and communication skills, which is also an element, I believe, something I learned at Wharton more than I could do in undergrad. And frankly, I learned that through my professional experience. It's only at Wharton that I got proper training for it.
Correct.
And so I believe that's also a key part of the program.
No, absolutely. And I think the advantage of us, the leadership team here, having studied at a Stanford or Wharton is this, that we bring those experiences and we know what is important and what the best of the best colleges have, right? So I still remember that communication class that you have at Wharton in semester one itself, where you have a teleprompter and it's a mandatory class that each one of us have to go through. And, I remember that there was a teleprompter and you had to write your speech and you pretty much read it. And I remember asking my teacher as to why we specifically have this kind of setup. And the answer I got from my professor was that if you are graduating from Wharton, there will be a day when you will be at a position where you will need a teleprompter. So you better know how to use it, right? And that is just stuck in my mind that, hey, when you graduated from an institute like that, you carry that responsibility and most likely you're going to be at a position where you will be facing the media and you will be in a crisis and you will have to make a speech. So better train for that. And similar is what we do at Masters Union, a lot of role play. Where we ask the students about, hey, if you were in this situation, what is the speech you're going to make? Also, very simple tactics, which I learned at consulting, but I think any college graduate should know, which is when you send a calendar invite, what the title of the calendar invite looks like is absolutely essential, right? Now, when we block time, it has to say Swati/Nayan. But I've seen a lot of time people just entering any subject lines, and then it reflects to me that, hey, I was also a newbie and I also learned it on day. What the titles should be and how the emails need to be structured in a bullet. But all of that, I think we make sure that our students know it upfront so that they are job ready on day one.
Brilliant. And to your point, I remember my crisis communication class where we had an actual media person come in and ask us difficult questions. And that is also something we might actually face in the future. And you're never prepared for that. Nobody prepares you for that except your school should. And I believe that's a very good curriculum aspect that you have in the program. So I think the final thing is, you also talked about the MBA being CXOs, being a lot of faculty being CXOs. And I believe that carries through to the undergrad program as well. I believe it'll be a mix of faculty, which will teach core subjects like in the first year, and then a lot of CXOs come in and speak.
So it's not just that the CXOs come and speak, CXOs come and teach, right?
Oh, wow.
So we're very clear that, hey, your core courses can be taught by, you know, professors in-house and in residence. For example, accounting, you know, this is a course where you need patience and you need somebody to just give you a detailed 101 on accounting. That could be a professor in-house, right? But if you're learning the advanced data analytics in your third year, or if you're learning product management, then somebody from the product leading companies has to come and teach, right? So it's not about speaking, but pretty much all our courses from second year onwards are taught by CXOs, which means that they do have a regular job, but they're coming here and teaching in the hope that when you graduate, you know, you are a talented individual with the right set of skills and not somebody that companies need to, again, sit and train on, you know, that's the hope.
Incredible. And I hope to see a future batch of leaders emerge from this program. And I wish all the success to the program. I think the final question from my end is that you've been a few years out of the MBA. What is your advice to students, not just MBAs, but across who are starting their careers, who are mid-career? Things that guided you to success?
I would say focus on learning, right? And I've seen, and I meet a lot of, now I'm in my 30s, so I can say I meet a lot of 20s people who focus a lot on, you know, this promotion. Just 2 years more, I'll make a principal at a consulting firm, right? Or, you know, I should join that company because it pays me 10 lakhs extra or whatever that is. I'm not saying you should not prioritize money, but you should not look at that as the main factor of your decisions. At least in your 20s, the main factor should be where I'm going to learn the most so that when I am in my 30s, I have the skill set to command any price that I want to. Because to be honest, I've seen people who are getting paid so much, but they are stuck. They're stuck because they've only done that job. And it's very difficult to now transition out. And they really want to do that, but hey, nobody is ready to match the salary because you haven't invested in your learning outside that narrow ecosystem that you were part of. Right. So I would always say that focus on learning in your 20s and see what opportunities are giving you the right skill set that you would want to leverage once you become a leader. And that's all that would matter as you grow further in your career.
This is very outstanding advice and one I hope to follow. Thank you so much, Swati, for taking out the time to speak with us. And we wish you all the best with the new program, and we hope Masters Union gets all the success being a force to reckon with in India.
Thank you so much, Nayan, for all your, wishes. But I think at one end, I just hope that not just Masters Union, but I really hope that more and more institutes like this come up in India, so that a lot of more Indians, get that kind of education that very few right now are getting because only a very select handful are able to go to your Harvard or Stanford or Wharton, right? So I really hope that Masters Union becomes that example that others follow, and that kind of education can be given to many more deserving individuals in India.
Absolutely echo that. And I hope that becomes more accessible to our fellow countrymen. But thank you so much, and appreciate your time today to speak with us.
Thank you, Nan. Take care. Bye.
To learn more about Wharton India Economic Forum, please head to our website www.whartonindia.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram for more updates.